The Cultured Meat Symposium is taking place online this October 19th through 21st, 2020. This year, topics of discussion include regulation, automation, scale, and outer space. Join speakers from NASA, Merck KGaA, Darmstadt, Germany, Memphis Meats, Aleph Farms, Meatable, Big Idea Ventures, Stray Dog Capital, and more. Learn more and register for this online event at www.cms20.com. Use coupon code FUTUREFOODSHOW for a special discount.
Thanks for joining us on the Cultured Meat and Future Food Show. I had the pleasure of speaking with Bruce Friedrich on this episode. Bruce Friedrich is the co-founder and executive director of the Good Food Institute. With branches in the United States, India, Israel, Brazil, Europe, and Asia Pacific, GFI is accelerating the production of plant-based and cultivated meat in order to bolster the global protein supply while protecting the environment, promoting global health, and preventing food insecurity and animal cruelty. His TED Talk from April 2019 has been viewed more than 2.2 million times and has been translated into 23 languages. This interview was recorded in September of 2019 and is part of a multi-episode series where we will be focusing the discussion on the terminology of meat. Let's get started. Bruce, I'd like to welcome you to the Future Food Show.
Thanks very much, Alex. I'm delighted to be here.
So we've had the pleasure of actually kickstarting this podcast with members of the Good Food Institute, and GFI has been an immeasurable resource for us and really the rest of the plant-based and, I guess I should say, cultured meat community. With that being said, tell us a little bit about your background and how GFI has been making impact.
So I started the Good Food Institute. I actually started working on it at the end of 2015. We hired our first staff in the summer of 2016, a couple scientists, a communications person, an ops person, a policy person. I think that was it back in 2016. And really the central brainstorm of GFI is that people eat meat not because of how it's produced, but despite how it's produced. And funneling crops through animals is extraordinarily inefficient. If we can take those crops and turn them directly into plant-based meat, or if we can grow cells directly, that's going to be a much more efficient process. So as it scales up, it should cost less. So the central idea is we can make meat from plants. Meat doesn't have to come from animals. And when meat does come from animals, it doesn't have to come from animals who lived on farms and slaughterhouses. We can grow the cells directly using cultivation. We can cultivate the cells rather than raising and slaughtering animals.
So throughout the last few decades, I should say, cultivated meat, cultured meat, clean meat, it's really been called so many different things. Why is naming so important for this technology?
Well, naming is important just generally speaking, I think. You know, you can look back and see, as just one example, avocados were originally called alligator pears. And when they were called alligator pears, nobody ate them. Once they were called avocados, they took off. And there are many other similar examples. And GFI, from the very beginning of GFI, has been looking at what we should call cultivated meat. And the main reason for that is two of our scientists, we were calling it cultured meat originally, which was the primary name. Two of our scientists went to the Institute of Food Technology annual conference. This is the big conference for food technologists. And they were talking about cultured meat at this conference, and food technologists were confused. So professional food technology people thought we were talking about something that had been salted or canned. Cultured has a meaning in food. If you Google cultured foods, you will get yogurts and all kinds of different salted and canned and fermented and other sorts of foods. If you Google cultured fish, you'll find that this is the term of art for aquaculture. So cultured fish doesn't work. And cultured meat doesn't really work. So We initially started doing consumer research, and our focus was exclusively on, will people understand it, and will people find it appealing? And we ended up deciding that clean meat was the way to go. And that worked for us for a couple of years. But now that the meat industry is so heavily involved, the two biggest meat companies in the United States are the two biggest U.S.-based meat companies, Tyson Foods and Cargill, have both invested in multiple cultivated meat companies. And as you can imagine, they're not big fans of clean meat. We didn't actually mean any disrespect to conventional meat, sort of like big oil companies have invested in clean energy, despite it being called clean energy. We thought clean energy is energy that's better for the environment. Clean meat is meat that's better for the environment. But really, just because regulators have not been using clean meat, some of the cultivated meat industry hasn't been using clean meat, and the big meat companies really don't like clean meat. We kind of went back to the drawing board, and a wonderful product development company called Mattson, they're North America's most successful independent food and beverage innovation firm. I heard them for the first time. I heard Barb Stuckey there for the first time at a food conference, I think at the end of 2016 or maybe early 2017. And we invited them to come reflect on the plant-based industry at a conference we co-hosted with the Pea and Lentil, the American Pulse Association and the Pea and Lentil Council, and just ended up chatting with her about growing meat from cells. And she was super interested in it. Some folks in the industry moved to cell-based meat, which she was pretty disconcerted by, is probably the nice way of putting it. Right. We certainly found that talking to people about cell-based meat didn't go very well. This was sort of the consensus term that came out of a meeting at the end of the Good Food Conference last year, but there was a lot of discomfiture with it. Multiple companies in the cultivated meat industry were not using it. And so we did some work with Mattson. They did it pro bono. Top people at Mattson, I think just about their entire top team, worked with Carrie Shada, who is GFI's consumer researcher. Then we had consulting help from a person on the Memphis Meats team. And after, I think, four focus groups and two rounds of quantitative research, the term that just really stood out was cultivated meat. So we developed a narrative and a graphic and a nomenclature. We announced it at the Good Food Conference in early September, and we were really gratified to see that two of the five members of the Alliance for Meat, Poultry, and Seafood Innovation. So the Alliance for Meat, Poultry, and Seafood Innovation, AMPS Innovation, when they announced themselves, they sent a press release, and they couldn't decide between cultured and cell-based. So they ended up sending a press release that just used cultured / cell-based, which was pretty awkward. And already two of the five members have said that they think cultivated is a better nomenclature than cultured or cell-based. And again, just the consumer acceptance on cell-based in our research was as much as 50% lower consumer acceptance for the use of cell-based relative to cultivated. And you really just, if you can avoid using a term, I mean, if you can find a term that is 50% better for consumers than another term, it would behoove you to go with that. It was also the case that in the focus groups, there was uniform support for the idea of cultivated, and a fair number of people really, you know, just recoiled at the idea of cell-based meat. And then cell-based meat also just doesn't make that much sense, because plant-based meat is cell-based, you know, all meat is cell-based, whether it's plant-based meat or meat grown directly from cells or meat from animals who are raised and slaughtered. Just scientifically speaking, referring to cell-based meat is kind of confusing. It doesn't actually delineate between any other kind of meat. So we ended up landing with cultivated meat, and response has been really positive so far. So GFI at least is going to rarely or never use cell-based and rarely or never use clean, and probably go all in on cultivated. That will certainly be the primary term we're using, and we've seen an awful lot of other people go in that direction as well. We actually have a blog about this that also links to the narrative framework, the visual analogy, and the full analysis, the full study, on our website at gfi.org/cultivated meat.
Really a great blog post, and I think every time I eat avocados now, I think about that blog post and alligator pears. So
that's awesome.
And we've definitely been hearing a lot of the, I guess, cultivated meat companies use the term cultivated meat now, and I think that if you think about it, it makes almost like a direct connection in your brain of what it could be, even if you might not necessarily know of the technology. Cool. So can you imagine a future where we would simply call cultivated meat just meat?
Well, I definitely think it's not going to require a modifier like cultivated. My hunch is that the future is going to be plant-based meat, what we currently refer to as cultivated meat, and then a very small percentage of regenerative, very high welfare meat. And my hunch is that we'll end up with plant-based meat, animal meat, which is just sort of the standard cultivated meat, and then something for the high welfare meat from animals who are actually slaughtered. Because I really don't know. I mean, it's definitely going to become the predominant way of making animal meat. So just like you don't refer to your cell phone as a cell phone, you just refer to it as a phone. I think eventually the idea of distinguishing cultivated meat from other meat will certainly change, if not go away.
And so how will naming of cultivated meat play a role from a regulatory standpoint? Do you think that FDA and USDA, do you think that what they referred to it as will make a difference for consumer perception?
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, we did some FOIAing of FDA and USDA early meetings on the technology, and they were referring to it as clean meat originally. And now I think they refer to it as cell-cultured meat predominantly. Nobody else refers to it as cell-cultured meat. You know, some companies refer to it as cell-based, some cultured, now more and more cultivated. And then clean meat remains a popular nomenclature as well. So just like FDA and USDA calling it cell-cultured meat hasn't really caught on anywhere else, I'm not sure it's super important what they call it. My hunch is, though, I mean, they stopped calling it clean meat just because of meat industry pressure. I think if everybody unites around cultivated is probably what the meat industry itself, the conventional meat industry, will be calling it fairly soon, I would guess. So I would think FDA and USDA would probably just go with that.
So we've seen a lot of buzz from not only cultivated meat, but also plant-based meat. Do you think that we're in a special time now for products and food and really appetite and that is going away from traditional animal agriculture or slaughtered meat?
I hope so. I mean, it really remains to be seen. I am extremely optimistic. So the fact that Burger King is advertising the Impossible Whopper and says that their chefs couldn't tell a difference between the Impossible Whopper and the standard Whopper that involves a conventionally raised and slaughtered animal strikes me as very important and likely a watershed moment. Though there was somebody on the marketing team at CKE Restaurants, which is the parent company of Carl's Jr., talking about how excited their CEO is about the Beyond Burger, which you can get as a substitute for literally anything else, any other burger at Carl's Jr. These sorts of things strike me as extraordinarily good signs. Similarly, the Beyond Meat IPO, the most successful IPO of the last decade, Impossible Foods has now raised almost $800 million from venture capitalists and has declared that their platform will work for other meats as well. So, I mean, it's early days. I don't want to get too far out in front of our skis. We're still less than 1/2 of 1% by revenue, of certainly an awful lot of excitement. And it's in the zeitgeist. As people care more and more about the climate, they care more and more about global health. There is a growing sense we need to do something about antibiotics. The former head of the World Health Organization declared that on our current trajectory, we are going to see the end of modern medicine through the end of working on antibiotics. So there are a lot of reasons that the way we currently raise and slaughter animals is problematic. And the only real solution is to either create meat from plants or grow it directly from cells. So we just need to make sure that we get, you know, as many people in the conventional meat industry, government, and science on the bandwagon. And that's really the big focus of GFI. It's reaching out to scientists and scientific institutions, reaching out to people in policy to make sure there's a clear regulatory path forward for the cultivated meat products, and also that governments are funding these technologies, open source science in these technologies, and then outreach to corporations. Really, you can't imagine a better partner than Tyson Foods. They've got the massive consumer base. They've got the supply chains. They know meat better than really anybody else in the world. So the fact that companies like Tyson, JBS, which is even bigger than Tyson, Cargill, largest privately held company in the United States, Hormel, Smithfield, Purdue, the fact that you see these conventional meat companies, the biggest conventional meat companies in the world, saying, actually, we're protein companies and we will let consumers dictate. If consumers want plant-based, we're going to do plant-based. If consumers want cultivated, we're going to do cultivated. It's absolutely the right attitude for them. At GFI, we're spending quite a lot of time and energy keeping that as the way that the conventional meat industry is looking at this.
There was a recent article, I think it was by, or it was a report. There was a recent report by RethinkX, I believe. And they, they gave out a number that was, and I think Lisbecht was working on the report with them. They gave out a number that said something like 90% of traditional animal agriculture could be gone by 2030. And that's huge, right? And I guess for that to happen, there would have to be a big event that takes place. What are your thoughts on that statistic?
I mean, I think the take home for us from that report, and yeah, Liz did consult on the report, and I think the take home on that report is that once this really gets going, it's going to go quickly. So you oftentimes see these sort of linear trajectories. But as Pat Brown is fond of saying, if once we get the price points right, so if you can make a product that tastes the same or better and that costs the same or less, there's really no reason for anybody to continue to produce or buy the previous product. If you and I had been having this conversation 25 years ago, we would have been having it on landlines, right? We went from, in less than one generation, we went from 99% of cross-country or cross-continental communication is on a landline to now 99.99999% is on either your cell phone or its text message, or it's one of the, you know, roughly a dozen platforms using somebody's computer. In less than a generation, a similar story can be told about photography. In less than a generation, we went from the vast majority of photos, well over 99%, being taken on analog film, to way more than 99% of photos are now taken, you know, on the camera in your pocket, your digital camera in your pocket. So applied to food, we have a lot of work to do, and I don't want to discount the amount of work that we have to do on this. But once we are at a place where consumers get exactly what they like about meat, the taste, the texture, and so on, and it costs less, you're going to see a very, very quick transformation.
What I like about the digital camera example is that not only did we make the switch digital, but the quality was better and it improved our photo-taking abilities. And it reminds me of Impossible and how they say that they're going to get better than the cow. It's going to taste better. And I can't imagine what that'll be like, right? I'm pretty excited to experience that, but I think that's exciting times.
Yeah, no, it's very, very exciting. And that's absolutely right. The cow is a static and ancient technology hard to imagine anything less efficient than a chicken or a pig or a cow in turning crops into animal meat. You know, I mean, the two big questions in food are, one, how do we feed 9.8 billion people by 2050? And two, what do we do about climate change? In the first instance, the most efficient meat is chicken, and yet according to the World Resources Institute, it takes 9 calories in the form of crops to get 1 calorie back out from that chicken. So sometimes when people are talking about the Amazon being on fire, they'll point out that it's for cattle ranching and soy. What they don't point out is that 100% of the soy that the Amazon is being burned down to grow, 100% of it is being grown to feed chickens and pigs and cattle. 100% of it is for animal food. And this incredibly inefficient process of feeding 9 calories to a chicken to get 1 calorie back out, even more calories if you're talking about a farmed fish or a pig or a turkey or a cow. Then the other big question is in agriculture is, what do we do about climate change? And there is now a scientific consensus that unless meat consumption goes down globally, we are not going to meet our obligations under the Paris Climate Agreement. While meat production is going up, the United Nations is predicting 70% more meat is going to be consumed globally by 2050. Really, the only we're not going to educate our way out of this problem. The only solution is to make meat in a better way that doesn't have such a huge climate impact punch. So this is the solution to those two big questions. And you know, you're right. It's extremely exciting. It's a much better technology, a much better way of making meat.
So I have a difficult question for you. Let's call it a bonus question. But don't worry, I'm not going to ask you your preference between Impossible or Beyond.
I love all my children equally, my friend.
Yeah. So if you were to start a for-profit company in the cultivated meat or plant-based meat or food space, what would you do?
You know, GFI has created a landscape analysis looking at plant-based needs in the plant-based meat and the cultivated meat industries. And there are a fair number of companies that are necessary, oftentimes as supplier sort of feeder companies for the rest of either the plant-based or the cell-based meat industries. So I can't give you one off the top of my head. What I would do if I were a serial entrepreneur who wanted to get involved in this space is I would reach out to GFI, get the list of potential white space companies, and start doing some due diligence on them, thinking about which ones I would have the best skill set to launch, talk with GFI's business innovation specialist, and do some, you know, due diligence and discernment to figure out what makes the most sense.
So how can listeners get involved to support this technology in general?
It's really going to vary on the basis of the listener. One of the most exciting things GFI is doing, last year we gave away $3 million through our competitive grant program to 14 projects, 18 projects in plant-based meat, 6 projects in cultivated meat, all over the world. So if somebody is science-minded, and I imagine you have a fair number of scientists listening to this, check out the GFI Competitive Research Grant Program. If you just Google GFI Research Program, the link will pop right up. I believe initial applications are due at the end of October. And this year, we will be giving away about $3.5 million through the Competitive Research Grant Program, and I imagine it'll scale up more next year. So for people who are science-minded, that is a pretty fantastic outlet. And then it's going to depend an awful lot on people's skill sets. GFI has some jobs open, which you can find at gfi.org/jobs. And there are more and more companies in this space as well. So if somebody is a lawyer or an accountant or an executive assistant, really sort of the range of skill sets that would work at any other food corporation is going to work for the plant-based and the cell-based meat companies as well, with, you know, sort of a broader range of needs in terms of bioengineers and chemists and meat scientists and lots of other roles.
So you can learn more about the Good Food Institute at www.gfi.org. And like you mentioned, there are a lot of great groups, whether you're an investor or an entrepreneur, to kind of dig in a little bit deeper. And I'm part of the GF Ideas call, and it's really amazing. I think it's every 2 weeks or so. With that being said, Bruce, do you have any last insights in general for our listeners today?
Just that anybody who's thinking about the best impact that you as an individual can have It would be hard for me to imagine a place where somebody's skill set can be put to more transformative and more important use than in either the plant-based or the cultivated meat market sectors. And folks can keep up with that by making sure you're listening to this podcast each time it's coming out. And you can also subscribe to the GFI e-news, which comes out every 2 weeks at gfi.org. And then we also supply monthly reports for people who just want to keep up with what GFI is up to. And you can get that by emailing me, and I'm just at Bruce F., as in Frank, at gfi.org.
Bruce, thank you so much for taking the time and sharing your insights on the Future Food Show.
Thanks so much, Alex. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you very much for having GFI on so often, and thank you for all the great work that you're doing.
Thank you. This is your host, Alex, and we look forward to seeing you on our next episode. As an update to the discussion, in early 2020, GFI awarded $4 million to 21 research teams from 9 countries around the world.